Good evening. Did everybody make it back to their seats okay? No? So this is an interesting, it's so good to be here for Christmas Eve. This is, if you didn't catch this at the beginning as Kelly started us off, this is, for Missio, this is our very first candlelight Christmas Eve gathering. And so if you don't have one of these, either that's because your parents don't wish you to have one, or you missed one getting it when you walked in, and so there's some in the lobby, and we'd love to make sure that you have one, because in just a few moments we're gonna light these together, and there's a very specific reason besides just the moment and the beauty of being in a room full of people to light a candle, and what that's like to pull all the other lights down and to just see the candlelight. This is a wonderful season. It's busy. It's maybe chaotic. There's a ton going on, and it's really easy to enjoy our own traditions. You just heard some kids. Well, you saw some kids. Maybe you didn't hear them, but what they were answering was what they were hoping for to open either tonight or tomorrow morning on Christmas. There's wonderful things that go on in this season. There is a lot that goes on. And our intention, our desire as we gather here tonight is to pause and to remember that this is a birthday celebration. This is the best, most frequently celebrated birthday around the world throughout history that there ever was. There's other people that are important throughout human history. There's other people who get their birthday celebrated really big. Maybe you think that you're one of those, and that's wonderful. Maybe your friends and parents and family now do a great over-the-top birthday party for you, and that is wonderful. We've tried to do that in our family and in our home with our boys, and yet there are a few moments and dates and people that get really focused and celebrated on. And this is the biggest. Christmas is the biggest. In next month, there'll be a day off for school. You can just write this in your calendar now if you missed it. But MLK, we celebrate his birthday because he's such a significant person and contributed to our society, to our culture, to our nation. And so his birthday is really special. The next month in February is a couple presidents that we get another day or two off of school because they were significant, and we want to honor and acknowledge them. And then there's Christmas that comes with a whole different level of decorations and adjustments of schedules and all of that. And what we want to do is, as we've gathered here, is to acknowledge that it is because of who Jesus is. And so the birth of Jesus, and today, as we look into tomorrow, December 25th of Christmas, of Jesus' birthday, his birthday is above all the rest, and it's because of who he was and what he did. And as we look throughout history at women and men that are significant and contributed to the lives of those around them and did significant things, and their birthdays are remembered, Jesus is just unique and special and different. And there's a lot of different ways that we can go about doing that, but he actually claimed to be the light of the world. And so one of the reasons that we're going to light a candle in just a few moments is to acknowledge that he is the light of the world, and he fulfilled the promises that were made about him before he was even born, which is different if you think of all the other people that we celebrate. MLK's parents didn't have things written about their son before he was born. Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, his parents didn't look around and say, this person, our child that is about to be born, is going to change history. And yet that's what is true about Jesus, that there were people that wrote and were anticipating him being born. They didn't know when he would be born. They didn't know where he would be born. They didn't know who his parents would be. They didn't know what he would look like or what his name would even be necessarily. But they anticipated him coming. And there was actually writings before he showed up that said, this is how great he's going to be. And what I want to do for the next few minutes is take a look at one verse that includes four different names, titles, descriptions for Jesus. And the reason I want us to just take a pause on each one of these four and reflect on and be reminded of who Jesus is because on this day that we would actually stop and pause and say, this is all, not to ratchet up income for stores. It's not just to get together as family. It's not just to get time off of work and school. It's not just to get a break. It's because of Jesus and who he is that all of this is pointing us and reminding us about who he is and how significant he is, how special he is. And so I want to look at a verse that was written generations before Jesus was even born, foretelling, it was prophetic about Jesus and how wonderful and unique he was going to be. And what it did is it set the bar in extraordinarily high for the kind of life he would live and how he would contribute to all of humanity. I'm going to read it for you. It's going to be up on the screen as well, but it's in this book called Isaiah, which is way in the Old Testament. It's about in the middle of your Bibles, and it's Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, and maybe this will be familiar. Some of you, many of you maybe have heard this before, but it's one verse, and it's pointing to, it's prophesying about Jesus. It says this, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called," and here's four titles for him, four names, "Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." For unto us a child is born, and right, it just is a repeat. A child is born, a son is given. It's like if you were writing an email to somebody, you would bold it or underline it or say, this is really important. Well, this is their way of doing that thousands of years ago, generations before Jesus was born. They just repeat it. If this is really important, we're just going to repeat it. There's another place in this book, Isaiah, that's describing God as holy, holy, holy three times because there's nobody else like that. And so this is really important. Don't miss this. Somebody's actually going to be born. There's a lot of ways that God can work, but he's actually going to give us a person. It's going to be a boy. A son is given. Somebody is coming that is going to be born at some point, and it's going to be a person. It's going to be a human. And then it says the government is going to be on his shoulders. And depending on if you like who's elected or if you don't, if you like who's in power, if you don't, if you get a vote in that in a democracy, if you don't, and it's a monarchy or a dictator, you may like the powers that are above you that affect your life, or you might despise them. But this prophecy says this one that's going to be born, that God is going to give, he's going to take authority over everything. And when we hear government, we can easily think of the social structures that have power and influence over us, and that's actually included in that. That's meant to be a part of what this verse means. But if you also think about governing power, that you actually have governing power over your life, or maybe you have a child, you have governing power over your child. But there's a very personal part of governing as well, and that's actually included in this as well. That a child is born, a son is given, a person is going to be born that is going to have the kind of power that is over not just systems and people and nations, but is also meant to be deeply personal as well and to have influence and power over each and every one of us should we choose to surrender to that. And so there's a big setting right off the bat. There's a promise of a person being born, and it's going to be a person with more influence than you could ever imagine, than ever has lived before. And this is what we're going to call him because he's going to live such a significant, unique life. We're going to have these four titles. And the first is Wonderful Counselor, which is like putting two different things together that don't always go together. Wonderful and Counselor. We kind of have an idea of what counselor is because we know what therapists are and counselors. And maybe they're described as really good or we like them. I don't know how many we would describe as wonderful, at least not in the sense that this is wonderful. This word wonderful is like the same word that's used throughout Scripture is amazing, that God is amazing. He does amazing things. The actual word means that it's beyond what our brain is used to understanding. It kind of blows the limits off of what we can imagine. It's beyond what we assume or think about. There's a wonderful, amazing, it's so big, it's divine. That the word wonderful here is pointing to something that is beyond what human beings can do or experience on their own. There's something divine about it. There's a divine counselor, a counselor, somebody who is in tune with, aware of, and available to what we're thinking and feeling and want to know. When we have questions, we go to people, and we might not call them a counselor, but we'll consider them wise. But when we're having problems and we go to somebody that we consider wise to have some input for us, they're not just wise, but they're also, we hope, safe. That a counselor is intended to have something to say to us to direct us, but also that is trustworthy and safe. Now, counselors, we hope, are that, and sometimes they're not. We actually have in a story in the beginning of Scripture, there's a counselor who is not safe. In fact, a counselor who has ulterior motives. There's a story in Genesis where the first woman, Eve, listens to a counselor who is not safe, that has ulterior motives to direct her in a way that's not for her best interest. And it leads her down a path where her and Adam sin. And sin enters into the human condition. And from then on, we've had a lot of problems. It's the very reason that this prophecy came, that God wanted to enter into our situation, to enter into humanity by giving us his son. That a person would be born that is fully God and yet fully human. In this miraculous thing, the technical word is called incarnation. But Grace just read to a bunch of our children here that everything changed when a baby was born, that a new day started. And a new day started because way back things got off track when a counselor with ulterior motives misled a woman and a man, and sin entered into our world. And ever since then, we've been in need of a son to be born that was going to come and be a divine or wonderful counselor that was both wise and safe and direct us in the right way. There's a British preacher, theologian named Charles Spurgeon. Maybe you've heard that name before. Lived quite a while ago, but he said, "Ah, beloved, it is because we were led astray and the world was destroyed by a counselor that it needed to be saved by and restored by a counselor." That somebody gave poor information and led somebody astray. And so there's a counselor coming that can be trusted, that is wise and safe and for our good, and that we can go to. And Jesus fulfills that. That Jesus shows up and he proves to be both wise and safe while being divine and directing people that came to him for directions that he could say. And we can take our questions as we read about throughout the New Testament when Jesus shows up, all up in the way up until today, that we can actually go to Jesus and say, "I need help for where I'm at right now." And Jesus is wise and safe and gives his divine direction into our lives. The next one is Mighty God. Wonderful Counselor, second title is Mighty God. That this baby that's born is going to become a mighty God. And titles are really important. These four names are super important. That they're not like names for many of us. Now maybe you come from a culture where names are deeply important, but well, let's take my name for example. It's not deeply important. Now, my parents chose it with care, and they were intentional with it, but when they named me Tim or Timothy, they liked the name because it was in the Bible. My parents are followers of Jesus. They said, "That's a biblical name." They found out that it meant, if you kind of trace it back in biblical times, it means honoring God. That name meant honoring God, and so I thought, that's great for our son. We hope that our son is going to grow up to be a man who honors God, but we don't know it is, and we're not actually declaring that he absolutely will. It's hope. It's aspirational. Most names are like that. Either we like it, we don't think they'll get teased by it. It's not on the most popular list right now, and so we're a little, you know, creative with our naming. Which, by the way, if you're not a part of Missio and you don't know Missio very well, there's a high bar here for naming kids. So there's a lot of kids. We produce at a pretty high rate. And then the creativity in naming is way up there. So just bring your best game on both of those if you want to be a part of this church, and we hope that you do. But my parents just liked the name Tim or Timothy. And most of us do that. When there's titles like this given, and in this culture at this time, thousands of years ago, it was meant to reflect a person's character. That a name was meant to say, "This is who I really am." I watch my sons play video games online sometimes, and I'll walk into the room and try to figure out what's going on and how they're doing, which I can usually tell from the other room based on the comments and words that are shared and screamed at the television or at their friends that are online. And I'll walk into the room and try to figure out what who's shooting who and what's going on. And I confirmed this, but the names that pop up on screen that they're either playing with or against are their gamer tags, and they're ridiculous, right? And for those of you that play online, you know that you might actually be uncomfortable that I'm going to say some right now, because some of them are just plain inappropriate. But others of them are like best shooter ever 99, I'm like, oh, wow, that's fantastic. You are playing with the best shooter ever online. This is, I don't know what country he is or where he is in the world right now. Isn't this awesome that you're, no, that's just some clown that decided to write that, and that's not his real name. Like, he's not the best. That's not his, look at his score, look at his ranking. He's not the best shooter ever. We name things and we name ourselves in a way that's aspirational. When it comes to mighty God, this wasn't like God directing Isaiah to write generations before Jesus is born. Maybe Jesus will show up someday and be a mighty God. We hope that he is. We're gonna aspire and hope for and write this, that he actually fulfills this. No, this was God directing Isaiah generations before Jesus was born. This is the plan. This is guaranteed. You can not just have wishful thinking, but you can have confidence that this will happen, that I will lead Jesus to be born. When Jesus shows up as a member of the Trinity, fully God and fully human, he will be a mighty God. And if you've read the New Testament and if you follow Jesus all and study him, you know that he shows up and he does things that are mighty. And mighty at that time and that point isn't just kind of a loose description. It's a confirmed adjective that says this is higher than everybody else. When somebody is mighty, when a warrior is mighty, he's above all the other warriors. And so if you're going to write mighty, you're above all the other, but this isn't a warrior, this is God. So he's a mighty God. He's above any other God. And when he shows up, what he's going to be able to do and how he's going to be able to do it is going to set him aside from anyone else. He is going to be absolutely unique. There will never be another human being that is able to do what Jesus has done. He will be a mighty God and he will be able to conquer all others. He is stronger. I just watched as I'm sure more than a few of you have had, the new preview for Superman that's coming out. If you haven't watched it, do not pull it up on your phone right now. Like, stay right here, and when we're done, then you can pull it up on your phone. There's a new preview for Superman, and I hope I don't lose too much respect with you, but I can't follow Marvel and the other guys and who's on what team and, you know, what uniform is better than the other and who has what powers and all this, but I do know a little bit about Superman, and it's a big deal that that's in this preview that he's bleeding. Don't watch it right now. I know I just tempted you with that if you haven't watched it yet, but what's the other one? Marvel and DC. Yeah. And I don't care tonight, so don't pull me aside afterwards and try to explain it to me. Like, I just, we can have that conversation later, and you can educate me, and then I won't feel so foolish when those discussions come up. But there's a whole universe because we have this innate human desire for something that is beyond us and that is stronger and has powers that we wish that we had, that we wish that we could fly, we wish we could shoot lasers out of our eyes, we wish that we could not be damaged and we could withstand any kind of onslaught, we wish we could conquer aliens and evil bad guys, and we wish we could do all these things, and we long for something that is more than us, that is stronger than us, is powerful. That's why that movie keeps getting made and the story keeps getting rewritten, and it will forever and ever and ever, because we want a hero to come. Mighty God was the term then for superhero, that they were longing for that thing, that person, that being, that one who was stronger than everything else, because this gets really difficult and painful and hard, and we struggle, and there's certain powers that come and oppress, and life is difficult and challenging, and so humanity throughout the generations has always longed for somebody to bring more power to our situation that can save us, that can be a superhero to come in and rescue. And God says, when the son is born, when a child is given, it's going to be a mighty God, and there's not going to be anyone else like it. And Jesus showed up, and he fulfilled that. Not in the manger, but later on when he grew into adulthood. And he touched and he healed people. And he spoke words that no one else could understand or see into other people's lives. And he spoke truth. And he allowed people to walk that had never walked and to see that had never seen before. And he did miracles that were beyond human capacity, the very definition of something supernatural. And Jesus gave us hints repeatedly that he's the superhero. And then he did the ultimate thing where he was dead and then he was alive again. He's a mighty God. And that he's alive now and ruling over and promises to return again. His second advent, his second arrival, his promised coming again. The third title that's given for him is Everlasting Father. Everlasting Father, and kind of like Wonderful Counselor, puts these two words together that kind of have these meanings that you don't necessarily always put together, but a father, we understand. We understand the concept of a father, both our human fathers, as wonderful as failure as they may have been, that we know what the idea of a father is. And the everlasting, we know none of our earthly fathers are everlasting. And everlasting is this description of the kind of father that Jesus is. Everlasting, that Jesus has always existed, and he always will. But there will be no end to Jesus, and there was not a beginning. And yet there's a beginning to all of these things. We saw in pages, as Grace read to the children, of creation being made new. That Jesus made it in the first place. That we have in the New Testament in Colossians, that he was there at creation, that he was the creator, and that he sustains and holds it all together. And so Everlasting Father is the one that was there before the beginning that made us. He's the source or the author of our very lives. But not only was he powerful enough and eternal and everlasting enough to do that, but he's also the Father who loves. I have this scene burned into my memory of when my oldest son Ethan was in kindergarten. And he had a friend in his kindergarten class named Joel. And when I came to pick up Ethan one day, we were putting on his shoes. All the kids were putting on their shoes at pickup time. And I got down on the ground and was helping him put on his shoes. And Ethan was sitting in my lap. And I looked across the little walkway, and there was a couple other moms and a couple other dads helping their kids get their stuff together and their backpack and putting everything together. And Joel comes out of the classroom. And he kind of takes a survey of what's going on right there outside the door at pickup time. And he sees all of his friends with their parents. And we were closest to him, and Ethan was sitting on my lap as we were finishing putting on his shoes. And Joel says this statement, this question, that each and every one of us have said. It was the oddest out-of-context question, not what you would expect a kindergarten to say standing outside his door at pickup time. But he looks around, and he looks down at me, and he sees Ethan on my lap, and he looks up, and he says, "Who loves me?" And I looked at the other parents, and clearly his parent wasn't there. And I was like, why so serious? Like, this is, we're just picking up. And looked around, and I was the closest, so it just fell on me. And I said, "Oh, hey, Joel, I love you. Do you need some help too?" And he says, "Yeah." So he sat down on my other leg, and we sat there and put on shoes, and the innocence and the vulnerability displayed by a kindergartner that looks around and says, "Who notices me? Who sees me?" And connects even the simple reality of putting on shoes and getting stuff together and going home as love is what each and every one of us are asking. Now, you may not have said that very question, "Who loves me?" But it's always there. It's a question that is always circling, that's always on. And Jesus has this title of Everlasting Father, of the one that was there at the very beginning that created each and every one of us. He authored our very lives. He put his fingerprints on our very beings. He knows how we're recreated. He knows every cell of our physical bodies and our being. And he says, "There, I'm there to answer that question at all times, always. I never take a rest. I never lose sight of you. I'm never not paying attention to you." And so in our waking moments, as we're always asking that question, is who loves me? There's an everlasting Father in the person of Jesus that says, "I love you and I see you, and you're never out of my sight, and I'm always watching and I'm always here." And the answer is always the same: I do. I love you. And the last title is Prince of Peace. A Prince of Peace. This position of authority that is actually doing something with their authority, and they're bringing peace. And peace is very, we taught a talk about, Vicky taught about peace a few weeks ago. And peace is not just the absence of war, which is great. We like it when there's an absence of war. But the biblical idea, the Hebrew idea, the idea that's connected to this title is that Jesus is the one that brings a kind of peace that can only be described as wholeness, of healed, of a good life, of this kind of life that God promises. It says, because of sin, you're far from it. But there's one coming who has been born and who has lived, who has died, been buried, and is resurrected and is alive today and is coming again, that arrived once as the first advent and is coming back for a second event, which will be bring peace and restoration to all that is broken. And Jesus will fulfill that and will do that. Those four titles just are a beginning and a reminder of why this birthday celebration that comes around every year and has so many wonderful trappings around it, but we want to take a moment to stop and say, yes, this is the Jesus that we know, that we worship, that we love, and that we need. And that he is a wonderful counselor, a mighty God, an everlasting Father, and he is our Prince of Peace. And when we know that and when we place our lives and surrender our lives to him, he actually empowers us and he brings light not only to our life, but to bring that for others. And so there is this tradition that we're going to now take part in of lighting a candle and letting the room light up and be reminded that Jesus is the one that brings light into our dark world and ultimately will bring restoration to us and to our world as a whole as we trust in him and follow what he has for us in this life.